This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. There was no record store in the little town of Snow Hill, North Carolina, where Marlena Evans grew up. She learned about music mostly by driving around with her cousins and listening to what was on the radio. But once she got to college, Marlena's passion for music exploded, and the music she loved was rap. She helped start a hip-hop club at NC State's campus. It included rap circles and dance parties that became very quickly very popular. Marlena eventually stepped up to the mic herself and took the name Rapsody. She soon caught the attention of Grammy-winning producer Ninth Wonder. Today, she rhymes about racial profiling, colorism, and feminism, and much, much more. She is a commercial success, and her music has led to collaborations with some of the biggest names in the industry. Last year, she was featured as one of the only guest rappers on Kendrick Lamar's album To Pimp a Butterfly. Rapsody's latest solo release is called Beauty and the Beast.
I don't need to go major, made it this far without paper. I don't need that cover either, I don't need none of your favors. Told my mama we gon' make it. I don't need your funds, I don't need to get naked. I just need to have some fun. I don't need your emo beats, all I want is stolen funk. I don't need your validation, hell I already don't want.
Clip from Don't Need It from Rapsody's EP Beauty and the Beast, her latest. Rapsody joins me in the studio now. Welcome. And I should say welcome back.
Welcome back. It's been a while, but I'm glad to be back.
Truly High, one of your first kind of musical iterations.
Oh, that was the beginning of it all.
Well, tell us about growing up in Snow Hill. It's about 25 miles from Greenville, right?
Something yeah, like about that. 25 miles from Greenville, about an hour and some from Raleigh.
Yeah.
So I was just there yesterday. But, you know, it was real Mayberry-ish, like, you know, small town. Everyone knows everyone, you know. Grandparents worked in the farm. I had a big family, so, you know, I just spent a lot of time outside barefooted, you know, playing sports and fishing. My dad would take us fishing. My grandmother had an old pond at her house. So, you know, it was just really laid back, slow, and just, you know, a real community environment.
And most of that community, your family, you talked about it.
Yeah.
You just said a big family. How big?
Wow, my mom is one of 13 and my dad is one of 9. So, you know, between both sides, I probably have over 200 first cousins.
Wow.
Easily.
And so was that a big part of your social network? I mean, is that who you hung out with?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. You know, I remember, like, you know, I had friends in school like, oh, we're having a sleepover. And mom's like, no, you don't need to go. You can go play with your cousins. Like, you know. So I was just talking with one of my cousins last night. I was like, you know, it's crazy. Everybody, you know, around Snow Hill and Greene County says your family, you know, they're different. You know, I just love your families because, you know, we're so close knit, and my cousins are more like my brothers and sisters and my cousins. So, you know, that's what it was. You know, if one of us got in trouble, then, you know, you're getting disciplined by all the aunts. Like, you're going to have an earful, you're getting popped or something. Like,
it is never going to end.
Never going to end.
Well, what about music? I mean, was that a big part of the kind of how you socialized?
Yeah, like, you know, so I was, my older cousins were, you know, teenagers. So, you know, at that time, they got their license, they're riding, and, you know, they're listening to hip-hop, Tribe, Nas, Biggie, and, you know, we didn't have a family reunion, you know, we're at each other's house, you know, whether we're hanging out or we're having a cookout, and, you know, that the older, my aunts and them, they're all in the living room talking, probably about us, sharing stories, but all the kids are outside with the car doors open, windows down, playing music, you know, doing the butt, like that's,
yeah.
I remember doing that, so, you know, or just kicking back, or we're talking, we always have music as the background, yeah. So, you know, music was like the soundtrack of my childhood, especially hip hop at that age.
And we talked about the fact that there was no record store in Snow Hill.
No.
And given the state of the industry today, I'm sure there still isn't. But did you buy a lot of music? I mean, did you go to the record store? Was that part of the?
I started probably when I got to be like around 10 or 11. you know, we go to the mall, Kinston, Greenville, 20 minutes away. And I think it was Camelot what was open.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my first CD I bought myself was Aaliyah's What's the 411.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted a hip-hop CD, but my dad was like, that parental advisory sticker was a no-go. So, you know, I would start off buying the, like, 99-cent singles, because with my allowance, it's probably all I could afford. And then it progressed into CDs. And the first hip hop CD I bought was Warren G's Regulate. Well, I didn't buy it because I wasn't allowed to. I begged my aunt to buy it for me, and she got it for me. So,
we should say you grew up as a Jehovah's Witness, right?
I did.
So tell us a little bit about that experience and how that shaped your relationships.
It was a good experience for me for the most part. One was because, you know, just the makeup of our congregation, it wasn't predominantly black. It wasn't predominantly white. You know, we had white, black, and Hispanic. Mm. So, you know, one, I think like in some settings, you know, you have might have some African-Americans in their community. They're not around a lot of Caucasians, or vice versa. Caucasians aren't around a lot of African-Americans. So, you know, sometimes you get caught up into what society labels us as and how we act. But, you know, I got to interact. Like, my best friend at the time was Deidre Kimball, and she was white. So, you know, culturally, I got that balance. So, it made me look at the world different. You know, I didn't see all white people as bad, and, you know, they didn't see all black people as, you know, this certain way. So that was one thing I enjoyed. We didn't grow up celebrating Christmas or Halloween or Valentine's Day. So, you know, I learned to, like, appreciate every day. You know, every day is Mother's Day. Every day is Father's Day. You know, so it was things like that that kind of shaped me as a person. And not to say other religions don't teach that, but, you know, just how I grew up, that's what it was for me.
You've even said that you didn't, because when it came to holidays and celebrating, even in the classroom, mm-hmm. I mean, your parents didn't want you to celebrate that way. So, you know, right. When it came to the cupcakes around the holidays.
I was checking out of school.
So the bad news is you didn't get the cupcake, but there was an upside to that.
There was
right?
an upside. I didn't get the cupcake, but I was like, I get to go home and watch TV and just chill. Like, y'all are stuck in the classroom. I'm out. So, you know, I didn't really feel like I was missing out on anything.
Yeah.
You know, we were a middle class family. We weren't super rich, but we weren't poor either. So it wasn't like I didn't go without. You know, our big day that we looked forward to was not Christmas. It was tax season, because when my dad got his taxes back, he'd give us all like $100 or $300. And it's like, at a kid at that age in the 90s, $100 is like $1 million. Yeah. Like, I got a $100 bill. Like,
yeah,
no, I'm about to go.
If you could make a holiday, that'd be
right,
it. Right,
that would be it. So,
and what about, did it have any influence on how you felt about hip hop, or about how your community or congregation felt about hip hop music?
If anything, it was not so much hip hop, whatever genre of music it was, if it had profanity in it, or, you know, if it promoted violence, then, you know, it would be looked down upon. But, you know, I think what helped me, I had a balance. Like, my mom was Jehovah's Witness, but my dad was non-denominational. So, you know, like, some of my cousins where both parents were Jehovah's Witnesses, they might not be allowed to participate in school activities, or, you know, have what we call worldly friends,
mm-hmm.
You know, just to have good influences around them all the time. But, you know, I had that balance. So, you know, my dad gave us that leeway. And my mom was pretty cool. Like, my mom's pretty laid back. So if anything, you know, I got to listen to hip hop and, you know, some things when I was of age that might have been looked down upon because of the language or whatever. My dad didn't like hip hop, but, you know, he gave us that leeway to have that individuality. So, you know, I always looked at it as poetry. You know, it was the voice of the people. It told a story, like what was happening. You know, when I sat down in front of the TV and I watched videos, like, I'm in this small country town. I go outside and it's woods and fields, and at night you can hear crickets, like, you don't hear anything, but, you know, I'm watching Method Man's All I Need video, and he's on top of a building, and there's no trees, it's just building, and he's telling his stories, jumping over fences, and it's like, wow, this magical place. Like, you know, he just told me stories of places that I didn't get to visit and see.
So it could transport you imaginatively, but you said also this is poetry of the people. It's telling their story.
Right.
Because you had such a different environment, was it telling your story in any way? Did you relate to it in that way?
I think I related to it sometimes, you know, in stories of love. You know, I think that's universal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, black history. You know, I know about the differences in races and discrimination. Like, I could relate to it in that, because, you know, especially being in North Carolina in the South,
right.
You know, whether it's my dad telling me stories of, you know, how my grandfather grew up and things that he went through, or, you know, my great grandmother, her mother being, you know, she used to be a slave or what, you know, something of that nature. So I could relate to it in that sense, just of my history and what was going on in the world as a young Black girl growing up, you know, in America. So those are the ways that I could relate to it most. But there were other stories, you know. I think every town, you know, they have their bad parts and their good parts. And, you know, I was sheltered from the bad part. Though, I had friends that, you know, lived that life and went through it, I was kind of sheltered. Like, you know, you can't go to the party. If you go, you got to be home by 9 because I know what happens at the party. So, you know, I might not have been in it, but to hear, you know, these stories, I could relate to it because I knew people, you know, that lived this life.
My guest is Rapsody, a rapper from Raleigh. She has worked with some of the biggest names in the music industry, originally from Snow Hill, and we're getting all that story today. We'll talk with her about going to NC State, getting involved in the music, and moving up through the chain and in the echelons, the highest echelons of the industry right now. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. My guest is Rapsody, a rapper originally from Snow Hill, North Carolina, works out of Raleigh now, and has worked with some of the biggest names in the industry. Her latest work is an EP called Beauty and the Beast. So we talked about being in Snow Hill, listening to rap music, parents not crazy about the lyrics. One way to keep you from using those kind of lyrics would be to put a clarinet in your mouth. So that was your entree into music, right, Claire?
I love music. You know, I said I'm going to join the band. I want to learn more about music. So I joined the band. I really, really wanted to play the drums. Everybody wants to play the drums. But the first person to get the drums gets the drums. So I didn't get the drums. So it was like my older sister played the clarinet. So I was like, okay, I'm so influenced by my cousins, my big sisters. I'm going to play the clarinet too. Because, you know, they didn't have a piano either. But I'm in band. And my band teacher, Mr. Morgan, at the time. And I used to hear the craziest stories about Mr. Morgan. Like, they were never good. So I'm already coming in with this idea of Mr. Morgan, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's teaching us, and it's called a reed. It goes on the clarinet where you put your mouth at. And so I'm at the front. I always sat at the front of the class. And he takes my clarinet to demonstrate how to put your tongue, lip on the reed. And he puts it on my clarinet and hands it back to me. So I get it and it's wet and I'm like, no, like I can't follow up with, I can't put my mouth on this, Mr. Morgan. Like,
yeah,
you put your saliva on it. Yeah. And at that day, like I dropped out of band because, you know, I didn't want to go to Mr. Morgan and be like, why'd you do that, Mr. Morgan? I didn't want any confrontation. It's just like, I'm going to quit.
Could have been the end of your music career. And in fact, you were really started to focus more on sports, and particularly basketball, right?
Yeah. I got into basketball. Me and my brother are 13 months apart. I'm the oldest. So we're really close. And, you know, at this time, I think he's 6 and I'm 7, or he's 7, I'm 8, around that age. And he's getting involved in rec. And we did everything together. So my dad wants him to play ball. And he's like, well, I'm not going if Marlena's not going. And that's kind of how I got into it. So it's like, okay, you know, I'll go. And, you know, I ended up falling in love with it a lot more than he did. He loves it, but, you know, I became passionate about it. And that's how I got into basketball. So it was basketball and hip hop. Like, they went hand in hand with for me, music. But, you know, I dropped out of band and I was from Snow Hill. And it's like, I want to be a rapper, but I don't know if I could be a rapper. So it was like, I could play ball, though, and I was good at it. So, you know, that's what I did. Like,
because there's East Coast and there's West Coast, but there was, at the time, no Piedmont rap.
No Piedmont rap, you know.
So you would have to either coin that or play basketball. You got a scholarship to play at Meredith, right?
I got an offer from Meredith, but I didn't want to go to an all-girls school. Sorry, Mom, not to give you any bad thoughts, but it's like, I don't want to go to an all-girls school. Because one, I was a tomboy, I was just used to being around boys. And, you know, I like boys.
Yeah,
And I was a really big Duke fan. I still am a huge Duke fan. I wanted to play at Duke, but I didn't get recruited. So it's like, my dad was a huge NC State fan. I had an older sister that went to NC State, and, you know, I was like, well, I'm going to go to NC State, and
You went there. Interesting story about a meeting you had with the basketball coach there.
Coach K. Yao. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I was working at Foot Action. I remember, you know, some of the coaches would come in and, you know, I always asked, I was like, do you take walk-ons? They'd be like, no, we don't take walk-ons. We kind of brush off. I'm like, ooh, attitude. I was like, all right, I just asked. But one day I was walking through campus and they were having, I think it was right before school started. It was around July. And they were having practice and the gym doors were open. And, I just stopped and I watched for a little bit. And then I hear somebody walking up behind me, and it's Coach K. Yao. And it's like, wow, here's my moment. So, you know, I asked her nicely if I could ask her a question. She was like, yeah. And I asked her, I was like, do you take walk-ons? And she asked, you know, what school did you go to at Green Central? She was like, oh, I know where that is. She was like, I tell you what. she looked at me, and I was still in basketball shape because this is my freshman year. So I hadn't gained that freshman 15 yet. She was like, okay. She was like, come by my office in the morning and let's talk. And I didn't go.
Hmm.
Yeah, I kind of regret at least not going to see what would come of it. But for whatever reason, I didn't go. And this is something I wanted bad. And my dad wanted me to play for NC State really bad. I told him, he's like, why you ain't go?
You know? Why? Well, have and you thought about it since? Why didn't you go?
I don't know why. I don't know if it was, you know, fear of rejection. You know, I think that was a big part of it. But, you know, I always tell myself maybe it was for a reason, because my true calling was with music. It wasn't, you know, I think long after that I met Charlie Smarts. And, you know, this was before we came Cooley High, but that was the beginning of us starting H2O, the hip hop organization. So, you know, I tell myself to make me feel better. Yeah. That's the reason.
Your soul knew better. Your soul knew better. I like that answer. I like that answer. Some inner part of you saying this is not it. Well, tell us more about that. You actually were going to for accounting, right?
Right. I went for accounting only because I was good at math. Oh. That was the only reason. I took honors in AP calculus, and, you know, I met with my advisor and he was like, you know, you score well in these areas, you're good at this. Based on these scores, this is what you'd be good at.
Mm-hmm.
And not so much, what are you passionate about? That wasn't the question. So it's just like, okay, I'll go for accounting. You know, though what I really wanted to do was either or both play basketball and do music.
Do music. Like, well, then tell us about getting involved in the hip-hop scene at State.
Oh, man. When I went to NC State, I had this idea of like, oh, it's going to be crazy fun. Because my sister, there was a club open by the name of Plum Crazy. And every time she come home, she'd tell us about Plum Crazy. That's all I would hear about. You know, it was fun. This person came through and, you know, we had this person for homecoming. And I went to this concert. So I'm excited because growing up in Snow Hill, I didn't get a chance to go to any hip-hop shows. I think I went to one concert before I got to college, and it was Montel Jordan and Boyz II Men. Great show, mm-hmm. But it wasn't Raekwon or Wu-Tang, and it wasn't Nas, you know. It wasn't Jay-Z, but so I was excited. But when I got there, I think, you know, hip-hop and the sound commercially was making a change. And, you know, it just... it wasn't as good as what I thought it was going to be. And hip hop was, it was kind of non-existent on NC State's campus. Like there were no hip hop clubs. There was, you know, nothing really going on that was
you said things were changing. Does that mean that there was a decline in that sort of thing or it had never been there?
I can't really say. It seemed like the time only because of the sound of music. It was a lot of good music before I got there. And, you know, that's when music was making its change, like the Snap era, you know, it was dumbing down a lot more than, you know, normal. So I think that's what I mean by it was just a change in the sound of music in that sense. But it was, you know, I think one year we had a country artist, no diss to country, but, you know, young kids, hip hop is, you know, the most influential genre. So it was like, I was working at Foot Action and Charlie Smarts was, you know, one of my coworkers, and we used to talk about music all the time, and he was in Influential at the time, which was a hip-hop band here with Tap One. And so, you know, we talk about that all the time. And he came up to me one day. He was like, yo, I got this idea. You know, I know Tap One. I know DJ O Digits, and I didn't know them at the time, and I know you, and you love hip-hop. you know, let's start a hip hop club because, you know, there's nothing really on campus. And, you know, let's just throw shows and just do fun things. And it's like, okay. So we got in Bregal one day and had a meeting, and that was the beginning. And, you know, I think our first event, we set up outside the tunnel with Free Expression and we just rapped. I didn't rap at the time, you know, I would host. But they rapped all day, and Median would come through. Median from the Justice League and Cesar Comanche would come through. And after a while, we're out there, and it might be 50 people now that we have, and we're just having fun, or we'd have rap battles.
Which are what?
Rap battles are when you have two MCs, and they come together, and, you know, by use of words, by rapping, you know, they try to break each other down and embarrass them in the best way possible. And whoever, you know, comes out with their head down, tail between their legs.
This is a version of Play in the Dozens, only kind of elevated to it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, we do things like that. We'd have benefit shows. After Dilla died, we had a couple benefit shows for lupus. We had one for the Red Cross. So, you know, those are the things we did, but we just used hip hop as the vehicle.
But you're noticing that they're wildly popular. Like, you're just showing up and all of a sudden you've got a large audience.
For one rap battle, I mean, it was nuts. Like, it was so packed. People had to stand on like the windowsills and, you know, it was just crazy. So there was definitely a need and want for it. So we definitely filled this void on campus, you know, for kids who Uber wasn't out at the time, and you don't have your car, you didn't bring it, so it's like, where can I walk to and go have a good time?
So when did you start rapping then? How did that happen?
It wasn't until the summer of 2005 I started rapping. It started out as poetry. I was a big fan of Deaf Poetry Jam at the time, with Mos Def and Russell Simmons hosting. So, you know, it started out as spoken word, and then, you know, I would just write rhymes to beats. Write rhymes. Never let anybody hear them. Charlie knew, because, you know, we were best friends at the time. So one day, the guys were in the studio, and they were working on H2O's hip-hop compilation, which is, you know, it's an album, but it's not by a single artist. So you have all these different artists that contribute a song to make this album. So they're working on that, and I'm just, you know, in the scene, and he's like, he looked at me. He knew I was writing rhymes, because I would let him hear them sometimes. He'd be like, I know you want to record, so won't you stop being scared? This is basically almost word for word. Stop being scared. Nobody's going to judge you, and go spit. Like, that was Charlie all the time. So it's like, all right, you're right. So, you know, I'm going to have fun with it. So I get in the booth and I record my first two songs. One was called The Life, and the other one was called, I can't remember, it was a love song, but The Life. So, you know, we finished the compilation. Tom Foolery, who's also in Cooley High, and he helped us start the hip-hop organization. At this time, he's shadowing Ninth.
So, talking about Ninth Wonder now.
Right, Ninth Wonder. So, you know, he's into production. He wants to learn more, but he's also working on a paper for school, so he's shadowing Ninth. And while shadowing Ninth, he's, you know, Ninth, I got this crew.
Is this, and put me on the timeline here, had Ninth already, was this before, during, or after Little Brother, for instance?
Oh, this was before. Like a couple months before Minstrel Show came out.
Okay.
So this was 2005. So they had just finished their second album.
Yeah.
So he's like, Ninth, I got this crew. You know, we got this compilation. Do you mind coming to talk to us? And anybody that knows Ninth, like, he's, anytime any kid comes and asks him for advice, you know, if he's not in a rush, he has to be somewhere, he's going to stop and talk to you, whether it's an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. That's the kind of guy he is. So he's like, yeah. So we get in Foolery's house in this one room. It's like 20 of us. I'm the only girl. And Ninth comes in, and Ninth is like, he's God to us because he's from North Carolina. He's a little brother. He worked with Jay-Z, my favorite artist. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, boy. So he comes in. He passes out Minstrel Show pilot CDs, and we're like, oh, wow, we get the snippets. And, you know, he lets me hear Jean Gray's Genius Project, and I'm like, I'm tripping. You know, I'm a fan of Jean Gray. So, and he sits down, he gives us advice about the music business, and, you know, he's just talking to us, telling us stories. He's like, all right, let me hear this compilation. So I think I'm on track 5 or whatever. So he's listening, and, you know, he's giving everybody advice. Oh, that's dope. And he gets to my song, and I sit all the way in the back. It's like Eminem's song, like, I got sweaty palms, you know, like I'm going to throw up spaghetti. Like, this is how I'm feeling, like all these emotions. Like, I'm embarrassed. You know, I think my voice is whack. He's going to hate it. He's going to clown me. I'm just feeling not good about this situation. So the song plays, and he goes, who's that? Everybody's like, that's her back in the corner. He's like, okay. He's like, take it back, play it again. And my mom like, why is he playing it again? And he goes, one more time. And he stops. He was like, that's your star right there. And I'm just like, at this, like, I don't even know what to do or say. And that's how it all began. Like, he put the gasoline on this fire. And it's like, I've had this dream. I didn't think I could do it. But Ninth Wonder is telling me that I'm a star and I can do it. I just got to work on these things. And that's all I needed. Like,
I mean, just to let everybody know, he worked on Destiny's Child, Beyonce. So we're talking right. about somebody
right.
who, if they say something like that, you're going to take it pretty darn seriously. What did you, in that moment, what did you think?
Man, like, dreams come true. Like, wow, I could do this. And, you know, at that moment, that was number one for me. When I woke up every day, like, he gave me homework before he left. He was like, listen to this album, this album, this album, and listen to how they say the words. And I know you like lyrics, but don't listen to what they're saying. Listen to how they say it. So he gave me homework. And that's what I focused in on. And my grades suffered because of it. You know, it was just like, I don't want to do accounting. This is what I want to do. Yeah. So I put my all into it.
Well, and if you get to the point where you are, you hire somebody else to do your accounting.
Right, but, right.
Talk about the group Cooley High that formed out of that. Was that sort of in that same time period?
Yeah, that was 2005. Yep. Mm-hmm. Cooley High became officially Cooley High the spring of 2006. So at this time, we did the compilation, you know, and we were building this relationship. And, you know, after Ninth gave me that, that great compliment, you know, I'm in the studio with the guys all the time. So it's myself, Charlie Smarts, Tom Foolery, Synopsis, DJ Odigits, and Tab One. And out of H2O, we're the ones that are always together making music. So Ninth hears, you know, a few of the songs, and he was like, won't y'all just become a group? You know, there's no groups out that are like this at the time, especially one with a female in it, you know, reminiscent of the Fuji sound. He was like, won't y'all just be a group? And it's just like, we're like, okay. So, you know, I came up with the name Cooley High off the movie. You know, the movie Cooley High is about, you know, friends and they go to school together. And it's just like, we met in school. So, you know.
So tell us now how you approach a song. I mean, Ninth gives you this advice. Listen to how they say the words. What did he mean? What did you hear? And did it change the way you approach a song?
It took me a while, but definitely. I was so into lyrics and, you know, saying poetry and saying it in a code and, you know, being witty with it and metaphors that, you know, I forgot the rhythm of it. And he taught me about rhythm and flow and cadence. So, you know, he was like, you got to think of it as your ABCs or your phone number. When you say your ABCs, you say in a rhythm, A, B, C, D. When you say your phone number, you go 919 something, 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 something. You don't go 919-84967. You know, like nobody can remember. You got to say in a rhythm. So it's like I saw how I wrote rhymes different. It took me a while to get it. It took a lot of practice. But, you know, eventually I got it. So now when I approach music, you know, I get the beat and you got to catch the melody first. So I might, you know, and then you plug the words into that. And, you know, that's how I approach it now, where before it was just like, you know, I'm just trying to say the hottest thing I could say to make somebody go, ooh, but they might not be able to learn my song easily because it has no rhythm. So, you know, that's the biggest thing that he taught me. And, you know, that's helped me the most, just perfecting my cadence and flow.
Well, I'm going to play a little clip here. We've got just enough time to play a clip from The Man. And I want to hear it first and we'll talk about it in a second.
Kissy. The man
of the house since his dad left. Wake up days feeling stressed. No stability every year, got a new address. Never changed the view from the window, he's seeing mad arrest. He saw his homie's death, same age, same story. Question God, wonder why he would take such a young shorty. It ain't even 8:40, already he thinking poorly. But still, he's the man. His mom tried.
trust him now to lock the place down. Feed his younger brother and sister, make sure they both lay down. For she home, can't be on the phone, gotta wake up early next morning. He don't have a lot of fun having to be so grown. And now he
this is a short clip from The Man. It is off Rhapsody's latest EP called Beauty and the Beast. I want to play more from that a little later, but I want to get your sense too, because you talk about the poetry has its own rhythm, right? It's got its own cadence, and then you're going to put a beat to it, and that's got its own kind of tyranny, right?
Right.
And then, but you've got a melody, and there's this kind of R&B feel that is a melody, and it's going in its own direction. So how do you, where do you start with that, with the lyrics? And then we're going to talk about the theme in a minute, but I've got about 30 seconds for you to give me a sense of how you start.
With the lyrics?
Yeah.
Oh, sometimes it's I come up with a concept first, whether it's, you know, with The Man, you know, it was based on, you know, stories friends had told me, or, you know, it's either something that the beat is telling me that makes me feel a certain emotion. But, you know, once I get the melody down and the cadence, you know, it's just kind of plugging in words from there. So, you know, I'll try to find the first bar, you know, something, 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 and whatever that is, you know, I'll just build from there. And especially when I do storytelling joints, you know, usually I don't sit down and like, this is how the story's going to go. It just starts with the first bar, the sentence, or, you know, the introduction, and in my head, I just see this picture, and I just write it from there.
We'll come back to that and talk more about that with my guest, Rhapsody, a rapper from Raleigh who's worked with some of the big names in the industry. We'll continue to talk about this, the making of the music, and working with celebrities like Kendrick Lamar and others. It continues on The State of Things. Stay tuned. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio talking to Rhapsody today, a rapper who is originally from Snow Hill, North Carolina, now works out of Raleigh, North Carolina, and her latest work is an EP called Beauty and the Beast. I want to play that clip again, actually. Let's go back to that clip, The Man, and I want to talk more about it. Yeah, and also the themes, too, that you have taken on in your music. So let's listen to that.
Kisses. The Man.
Of the house since his dad left. Wake up days feeling stressed. No stability, every year got a new address. Never changed the view from the window, he's seeing mad arrest. He saw his homie's death, same age, same story. Questioned God, wonder why he would take such a young shorty. It ain't even 8:40, already he thinking poorly. But still, he's the... His mom trust him now to lock the place down. Feed his younger brother and sister, make sure they both lay down. For she home, can't be on the phone, gotta wake up early next morning. He don't have a lot of fun having to be so grown. At night he pray the world just throw him a bone, tired and stressed. His grades suffer now, and they don't know about home. So his teacher's on his back again, and he don't own phones. Kids pick at him, now he feel he need those to belong. Daydreaming about a life, living just like Puff Combs. On his walk to the crib, he always hears several blown. Trying to think positive, but everything's wrong. Why his daddy can't be at home and beat the motherfucker. Now he got a little plan. He can sell a few rocks and maybe make a few grands. Take his family and move him, expand him to better lands. And beat the motherfucker. And beat the motherfucker.
That's a clip from The Man from Rhapsody's latest EP called Beauty and the Beast. I'm talking with Rhapsody today on The State of Things. I'm curious to know what kind of feedback you've gotten on a song like that from a rapper who is female. I'm not going to call you a female rapper, but the fact is you're a female talking about a male experience.
Right. The response has been amazing, and especially from a lot of men and young boys. Like, I get, you know, messages and DMs and tweets, and, you know, I'll do a show and a lot of guys will come up and they'll tell me, thank you for doing this song. And then, you know, they'll say, like, it's crazy that it took a woman to do it, but, you know, it's amazing how you captured our story and our feelings in a song as a woman. But, you know, it's a lot of thank you. Like, they feel like, you know, you gave us a voice and you told our story when a lot of people don't understand, and you made it relatable for people. So, you know, the response has been like amazing. You know, people tell me they ride and they cry to it, or, you know, so.
Did you have any hesitation in your own mind about making that song?
Oh, no, yeah. No hesitation. Only because it was honest. And when it's honest, you know, I don't hesitate. Like, if that's what, you know, hip hop is. It's a voice of the people and it tells that story. And I felt like it was a story and a topic that wasn't talked about or hasn't been talked about enough in hip hop. And as a woman, like, I want to tell it too from my perspective to say, like, I understand. You know, I'm not a man and I don't know how that feels, but I understand. And I want to show you why and that I do understand by making a song about it. And you have my support and my empathy, you know. So that was just how I took it. You know, I had a lot of friends, you know, well, not a lot, but I had enough, you know, that grew up without fathers and had to grow up fast and had to take on a lot more responsibility than I did at their age. And even too, like Lavelle Moton, who's North Carolina Central coach, he wrote a book recently, you know, about growing up without a dad. So, you know, I wrote it for him and his story. And, you know, that's just how it was.
Again, we talked about not wanting, and we can certainly understand why you don't want to be called a female rapper. Every time you kind of give you another silo, nobody wants to be called that. But the fact is, you're a woman in a field where there are very few women in this particular field.
Right.
Is that, does that give you a sense of responsibility? Do you feel that to some weight because of the fact that there aren't many women doing what you're doing?
It's not a bad weight that I look at it as. You know, I'm happy to fill the void. But, you know, when I first got in it, I didn't mind being called a female rapper because I looked at it like that. Like, you know, there's a void. There aren't a lot of us representing, you know, women at the time. You know, there was only one, and that was Nicki. So, you know, it's like I looked at it as like, you know, I'm happy to be a female rapper, you know, to be that representation. But, you know, I look at it as my responsibility, you know, I feel like I have a purpose and that's it, you know, to bring balance, you know, to hip hop and to show especially young girls that, you know, womanhood comes in many different forms and shapes and sizes and colors and personalities. You know, I'm a tomboy, you know, you don't have to show your body, but if you love your body, that's okay too. You know, I grew up in a time where I had MC Light and Queen Latifah and Salt and Pepper and Little Kim and Foxy Brown and Lauryn Hill. And they all were different. They all had different styles. You know, their dress was all different. And it gave me a choice. You know, it's like, you know, I love Little Kim. I ride to Little Kim. I respect Little Kim. But I'm digging Lauryn's style because, you know, that just fits me more. I'm more comfortable like that. And, you know, that's, I feel like that's my responsibility.
As you grow, you certainly have grown in popularity and you have a much wider audience now. And I wonder if that has caused you to any conflict in your own mind about, you know, whether or not fame comes with the price of having to repeat or go in a direction musically that you don't want to do. Have you felt that kind of pressure to move away from your roots to what it was that got you here?
No, I haven't felt that pressure, but that's only because of my circle of people. That's because, you know, I'm under Ninth Wonder and, you know, I have, you know, supporting label mates and the people I choose to surround myself around, they get it and, you know, they keep me grounded. Growing up in North Carolina, you know, I don't have to walk out of my door and compete with a million rappers. It's not like a big metropolitan like New York or L.A., you know, so it keeps me grounded.
What a treasure it is to have somebody like Ninth in our community, you know, right, who actually understands and is a scholar of the music, a historian who cares about what the music is and can certainly, you know, make it happen.
Right.
So that
right,
when an artist like you with the enormous talent that you have comes along, kind of going to be exposed to that.
Yeah, he's prepared me well, too. Yeah. You know, even for the fame, you know, he's like, you know, this is what comes with fame.
Yeah.
But you can be successful and without being famous and still, you know, have the money and do things that you love. Because once you compromise your art or compromise yourself, then you lose some sort of happiness. Mm. And, you know, just his advice and then seeing it too, like, you know, people that chase the fame kind of lose themselves and they don't seem to be as happy. And I want to be happy.
Is that what's going on? I'm going to play a clip from the song Hard to Choose, which seems to take this on directly. Let's play this clip.
Welcome to my side. When you look in the crowd, the minority's never white. I appreciate y'all, but I'm lying if it don't bite. Why?
So hard to choose.
Cause I love all races, but we gotta raise them. Cause I know the scale tipped ain't in no black girl's favor. Hey y'all, we all outcasts, these black girls favor. The blonde Barbie is scars, we all gotta save them. No love lost for whites, Latinos, or the Asians. Loyal to all, but when I look in these black girls' faces, I understand why I chose to be better, not basic. So it's not hard to choose. Yeah.
yeah. So excuse if I don't care if hipsters relate. It won't for you at all, why these songs were made. Like you overlaid at the airport and missed the sort of takeoff. Don't understand why we get naked. Why it's hard to choose being real or being fake, huh? Cause the world worship people, they get their cake up. But I chose the daylight soul and raise the stake up. Now, why it's
so hard to choose.
Yeah. Seldom support I own, I held myself for advancement. Wanna make sure our daughters have better chances. But y'all ain't at shows and watching videos. Why it's hard to choose class or letting ditties show. But it's better for my heart, honey, like Cheerios. And secondly, more comfortable doing winter lows. Trying to build you up like I went to Lowe's and bought a lot. MC Light, I ain't forgot what you told me. I ain't Hovey, but damn, it's hard to choose being humble or going ham. Humility's a weakness. I was told different. Quietest in the room is the baddest one like Durant. It's hard to choose Carolina over Atlanta, Chicago, LA, especially in Johannesburg. Yeah, cause it's been love since beginning. Home away from home versus homes, we get no spins in. Why it's so hard to choose.
Hard to Choose by Rhapsody, a song from her latest EP called Beauty and the Beast. So you took that on in that song. You were feeling it when that song came together, huh?
Yeah, I was getting some frustration out on that one.
but you have. I mean, you were one of one of the only guest rappers on Kendrick Lamar's album. It was a seminal album. It really changed, in a lot of ways, changed everything to Pimp a Butterfly. Tell us how you got connected.
Oh, I met Kendrick Lamar for the first time in 2011. He came down here. He was doing a show at North Carolina Central, and, you know, he had grew up on Little Brother, a big fan of Ninth Wonder. So he came by the studio, you know, and that was my first time meeting him. Like, we kicked it. We took him to Cookout, got him some milkshakes. You know, when you come to North Carolina, you got to do Bojangles or Cookout. We know this, right?
Homespun. For those of you who don't know, both of those chains started right here in North Carolina.
That's right.
Go ahead.
So, you know, we did that. And later that night, you know, I was working on For Everything. So we did the first song together, Rock the Bells. And ever since then, you know, we just had this relationship, you know, fans of each other. He's always been supportive of me. You know, I'm a huge Kendrick TDE fan. So, you know, that's how I, you know, built the relationship with them. And then, let me see, in 2013, it was the day after he dropped Control, you know, this the big Etherverse, you know.
Yeah.
That had a lot of rappers uptight.
But tell us about that. Tell us the story. Why was that so important?
That verse? So he dropped that verse, and I was in New York at the time having a listening session for She Got Game. And the next day, I went to DJ Premier's studio to shoot a video. And Kendrick called Ninth from South Africa. And, you know, they were talking, and he goes, while I'm working on my next album, I have a concept, and I want to get Rhapsody on it. And so, you know, I'm excited. I'm like, you know, Ninth, and I just let us know when you're ready. And this was 2013.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't get the next call from him until January of 2015. And this whole time between June, July of 2013 to 2015, I didn't hear from him. Didn't see him, didn't go to any shows and text him. I emailed him once just to check up, you know, but I knew he was working. So, you know, a year and a half goes by and I'm like, well, maybe, you know, the ideas change or whatever. I know how it goes, but I'm just excited waiting for an album like everyone else. And then January 2015, you know, they reached out again. Dave, Kendrick's manager, called Ninth, and he was like, you know, Kendrick wants Rhapsody on the album, and we're going to send something for her to put some voice on, which means to put a verse on. And that's just kind of how it happened.
And here's how it sounded.
Where the homegirl Rhapsody at? I need you to speak your mind real quick, love one.
Let me talk my Stu Scott. Excuse me on my Tupac. Keep your head up, when did you stop? Love and die. Color of your skin, color of your eyes. That's the real blues, baby, like you met Jay's, baby. You blew me away. Think more beauty in blue, green, and gray. On my Solomon up north, 12 years a slave, 12 years of age, thinking my shade too dark. I love myself, I no longer need Q-Putt. Enforcing my dark side like a young George Lucas. Light don't mean you smart, being dark don't make you stupid. A frame of mind for them busters, ain't talking woo-ha. Need a paradox for the paradox, they tutored. Like two tides, LL, you lose two times. If you don't see your beautiful in your complexion, it ain't complex to put it in context. Find the air beneath the kite, that's a context. Yeah, baby, I'm conscious, ain't no contest. If you like it, I love it, all your earth tones been blessed. Ain't no stress, jigaboos wanna be. I ain't
talking J, mm-mm, I ain't talking B. I'm talking days we got school, watching movie screens. And spike your self-esteem, the new James Bond gonna be black as me. Black as brown hazelnut, cinnamon, black tea. And it's all beautiful to me. Call your brothers magnificent, call all the sisters queens. We all on the same team, blues and pyrus, no colors ain't a thing.
That's a clip from Rhapsody's verse in the song Complexion, the song from Kendrick Lamar's 2015 album, To Pimp a Butterfly. Do you write the lyrics?
I did. I wrote the lyrics in a hotel in D.C. After watching a Duke game.
I want to ask you how it came out or how you felt. Wait, so and you get the music, you're writing to that music then?
Yeah. He sent me the instrumental. But he only sent me, you know, the beat changes from me, so he only sent that part. So I didn't get his verse. I didn't know what he was rapping on before that. So he told me the title, and he told me, you know, I just want to do something for our people. Everyone's beautiful, all shades, but I just want to do something for us. And that was kind of it. Like, I kind of knew where he was going already. You know, growing up a black girl and being darker skinned, you know, no thought process needed for it. So I just kind of wrote it. You know, I write a few bars. I stop and watch a Duke game. And I write a few more. I recorded it at night.
You also have enormous success and a big fan base in South Africa.
Huge, huge. That's my biggest fan base in the world.
How did that start?
Man, I think it was just, you know, the internet and music now. You know, can go around the world in a second. So, you know, they
Which
just
Which is to say there are millions of artists they could grow onto, and they picked you.
They just caught on to the music. Yeah. You know, one Ninth had taken the picture of my Idea Beautiful cover in South Africa the first time he and Fonte went. So the Idea Beautiful, the cover was shot in South Africa. There's an artist by the name of Nomza Mazwai. She really shaped the sound of the Idea Beautiful. So it already had this, you know, musically, it was shaped around music that was from a South African artist. So, you know, I think that was, you know, part of it. But, you know, I don't know. I guess they just fans.
So what's next for you? Are you working on another EP or long
album? Second album. I've been working on it for 2 years. It's done for the most part. Right. We just have, you know, some small things to wrap up on that end. But, you know, hopefully I'm going to try to have it out this year. If not this year, early next year. But I'm excited.
We'll have you back then.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait.
Rhapsody, what a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Frank.
Rhapsody is a rapper from Raleigh, originally from Snow Hill, North Carolina, worked with some big names in the music industry, is a big name herself, and her latest EP is called Beauty and the Beast. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Will Michaels, and Charlie Sheldon Orman. Robin Copley is our technical director, Brent Wolf, WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stasio.
World star on world stars, lot of love in this life hard. Keep us praying like, oh God. Illegally thievery, think of stealing off. Easily frustrated, we hate it, yeah. That's why we scream out, we made it. That's the our future, they know we was awesome creators. Something from nothing was told, kings walk with men. You frontin' for the people and by the people, but them over money. I'm on my Viola Davis, yeah, working for justice. How you get away with murder? Be a cop and just kill us. How we supposed to not catch feelings? And it's alive. Well, we got kids in these buildings. I'm on my Viola Davis. It's what you call a defense for all the drama they gave us. We spitting Shonda Rhimes with. Too high for you like ganja. That's what Shonda Rhimes with. I holler back in the Hamptons. You're still black if you're rich. Spread love ain't just the Brooklyn way. It's universal. 360 out of 9 lives.